This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 56 with Richard Tubb. Welcome along to this Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined by an old friend, Richard Tubb from jolly old UK. Richard, how are you going?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Robert.
And it's great of Richard to be able to spare some of his time. Obviously, what time is it over there in merry old England?
Jolly old England. It's just gone 9 in the morning. So.
9 in the morning. Okay. Well, that's the wonders of global economics. So, and the wonders of Skype that we can chat about that. So what I thought I'd get Richard on to have a quick chat about is books. One of the things that I think people would have said, I suppose, you know, the coming IT revolution was the book was dead. You know, the digital is going to kill everything. And I think we'll find that Amazon actually sells more books, including the digital versions, than they've ever done before. So I don't know about you, Richard, but I have a Kindle and I find myself reading more. What about yourself?
I do. I find myself reading an awful lot. I've got a Kindle Paperwhite, and had a heart-stopping moment earlier this year, Robert, when I had the original Kindle, and I was away on a trip, and it just failed. And it's like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to pick up one of those old-fashioned paper books now. But got back to the UK and got in touch with Amazon. And, you know, one thing I will say about Amazon is their customer service is phenomenal. Got in touch with them, said, hey, I've got a broken Kindle. They said, unfortunately, it's not under warranty, but let us offer you a discount on a new Kindle Paperwhite. And indeed, you know, sent my old Kindle to them, and they've sent me a Kindle Paperwhite out, which I'm absolutely loving, really enjoying, and reading more than ever on it.
And I would have to agree with you. I find Amazon's customer service to be superior. They really are very good at not only helping you, as that case demonstrates, but also, you know, determining what is worthwhile reading or what you're following, or, you know, tailoring things to you. So it's interesting that one of the things that someone brought to my attention recently was, you know, all this cloud computing stuff, you know what? Amazon's really the company that started all this. You talk about, you know, digital books, Amazon was the one. You talk about Amazon Web Services, cloud-based storage, Amazon was the first. So they don't tend to get the credit for a lot of this stuff, but they're certainly out there kicking a lot of goals. So again, highly recommend the Kindle, highly recommend Amazon. And again, they make the purchasing and the reading of the material so much easier these days. So we both obviously enjoy reading. We get a lot of benefit out of that. And I think both of us spend a lot of time reading business books and that sort of material. So what would you recommend is worthwhile? Well, you're probably the thing you would recommend that people in the IT game, IT professionals, business owners with an IT bent, what are the books they should be reading, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, any book is good. And the reasons being, I mean, I talk about, I read a lot of books. I do tend to read a lot of self-development books, a lot of business books. But anything really that you read, I find tends to take you away from the problems at hand, take you away from the business of day to day, and just allow your mind a little bit of time, you know, to take a break, concentrate on something else. And of course, I find that reading a book helps relax me, helps get me more motivated, helps get me focused. So I read a lot of books of different types. I like biographies as well as self-development books and business books. And one of the things I'm trying to persuade myself or force myself to do a little bit more of is to read more fiction books, because if you're talking about taking your mind off job at hand, sometimes sitting down and reading a business tome or a self-development book, you know, it's putting more pressure on yourself. A fiction book is a great way to take your mind off everything and get away. So interestingly, going back to the start of the conversation, Robert, when we were talking about Kindles, I read, you know, probably 90% of the things that I read on Kindle now. Fiction, for some reason, I don't read on Kindle. I've got a few fiction books, but I've not got around to reading them. I still prefer a paperback. So I was reading Isaac Asimov's I, Robot just the other day, and I was reading the old-fashioned paperback version. Don't know why that is, but, you know, I sit down and read fiction in paperback, and I read everything else on the Kindle.
I think that, again, there's still a place for the book. Book lovers always still enjoy, you know, turning the pages, and it's a whole experience. I think that the Kindle and those genre are probably, you read those a lot quicker, and perhaps you don't read them as in depth. And again, if you really want to get into the experience, I think, like I said, nothing beats the paper book. I have a very large collection of books, and I have scaled that down and sold a lot of them on eBay to move across to a digital. But there are a number of key books that I will always keep, you know, in hardback and also in paperback to read. So I think that it's very interesting these days when most people you find probably don't read as much, or they're skimming or whatever. There is a small subset of people who do read and are keen on reading more. And I think that really shows in the benefit that in their own personal wealth. I know for myself that, you know, early on I was never particularly a good reader at school or very interested in it. But, you know, ever since getting into business and finding some self-development books, like you said, and then some great fiction works as well, it's really been something I enjoy. And like you say, it's something that takes your mind off the day-to-day. So one book, I don't know if you've read it, or there's a series actually. Have you read the Daniel Suarez trilogy?
I haven't, no, not aware of that.
So again, they're based, the first one's called Damien. They're based on a future where a master programmer, I suppose, you know, dies but leaves his embodiment in the machine, in the internet, and then it starts creating its own world order. And it's very interesting because when you read what the author's done, it incorporates things like, you know, drone technology, Google Glass, heads-up displays, learning algorithms. Very, very interesting, especially if you're a technology person. I think you get a lot out of that. So that's what I would recommend for you to have a look at fiction-wise. Daniel Suarez, Damien, is probably, there's two books in that series. So, yeah, put that on your list, I would suggest.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate the recommendation. I'll make a note of that. It's interesting at this juncture, actually, to, you know, I pick a lot of book recommendations from yourself. Mutual friend of ours, Andy Parks, who runs the IT user group here in the Midlands where I am. Andy reads an awful lot and shares a lot of book recommendations with me. And on that vein, the site that I find myself using quite a lot is a website called Goodreads. .com, and Goodreads is a place for you to connect with friends, almost like the Facebook for books. And people share recommendations, and I find myself picking up a lot of recommendations of fiction books and different types of books to read from Goodreads. And Andy Parks is a really good one for sharing his books on there. So Goodreads.com, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely something that I'm involved with as well, and linked up with you and Andy. And it's always good to see, you know, what stuff you guys are into, and I'll obviously add that to the list. What I like about Goodreads, obviously, it's something that Amazon bought a little while back, so it's all rolled into the Amazon sphere these days. But for me, it allows me to keep a list of books that I want to read. So typically, you might read in a magazine or someone recommends a book. Where do you put it? Again, that's a great place. And you can actually get an app for your device that would allow you to scan in the barcode. So you can be in the bookshop and scan in the barcode of a book you may want to read but can't currently afford, and it'll go into your library. So I think it's very, very handy. And when it comes time to buy a book, you can always go back to that library and browse what you want. You can divide them up into shelves and all that sort of stuff. So been using it for many years, very, very handy site. And like Richard said, would recommend that to everybody.
Mm. And I'm interested, if I can ask you a question, Robert, at this stage. I previously, whenever anybody recommended a book to me, I would typically go out and buy it for my Kindle or order it off Amazon. And what I was finding, of course, you know, book recommendations are thick and fast. They come in all the time. I found that I ended up collecting books and they were gathering dust on my bookshelf. So now I tend to, whenever I get a book recommendation, add it to an Amazon wish list. to read a library on Goodreads. I'm intrigued, Robert, to ask you a question. Do you tend to just go and buy books thinking that's great, I've got to read it, I'll buy it now? Or are you like me, do you tend to find if you buy them, sometimes they gather dust? Almost it puts pressure on you to read too much. Do you, so which one do you tend to do?
What I started off was is when I used to do the old paper books, I'd go into the bookstore looking for one particular book and walk out with 15 others. and end up in that sort of environment. But again, basically the same thing now is that I've disciplined myself to record, you know, get them down somewhere in a bit of paper, then get them into the Amazon wish list, divide them up into, you know, a personal, a business, and a technology wish list. And then depending on the time, I'll work through the books. When I've sort of got nothing to read, I've gone through the magazines that I'm reading, I can go through the wish list and sort of look at it. Oh, I feel like a fiction work, or I feel like some business stuff, or I feel like that. So I think to me that's the best way that I tend to do it. So the other advantage that I find also is putting them on a wish list, you can generally find when they come cheap. So one of the books I added on my list, being a history buff, was something that I'd always wanted to read on my bucket list, was The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. So huge book, but you know, put it on my list and ended up getting it for a whole $2. So again, that's an example of, you know, putting on the list, waiting, and then, you know, even getting a further discount on it. And that, again, was a very worthwhile book and glad that I read it. So that's basically my process.
It's interesting as well when you say about books coming on discount. There's a lot of books that I have owned or have read in paperback format that when I notice come up on Amazon Kindle or Kindle format at a cheap price, I just go ahead and buy them anyway. I'm all about reducing the amount of paper books that I've got. You know, they, you know, take up a lot of room, tend to gather dust. And interestingly, of course, the Kindle, when you're traveling, the thing I like most about it is I don't really know what mood I'm going to be in when, you know, I'm in an airport or when I'm on the train. Am I in the mood for a fiction book? Am I in the mood for doing some self-development, some business reading? So I've been finding I've been buying books and putting them on the Kindle. So whenever the mood grabs me, I can read, you know, anything of any type. The book that springs to mind, there's an author here in the UK, a lady called Grace Marshall, and she wrote a book called 21 Ways to Manage the Stuff That Sucks Up Your Time. Really interesting short read, you know, a fairly lightweight book, 21 really good tips for time management, for productivity. I read the paperback version of that and then actually noticed that it came up on Kindle. I think it was for £1, £1.50, something like that, you know, throwaway cup of coffee type price. So I went and bought a copy on Kindle. It's the sort of book that I feel like I refer back to again and again. So I bought it on Kindle and used the opportunity then to send the paperback version to a friend of mine saying, hey, you know, read this book, enjoyed it, think you'll get something from it. So Kindle, good for that perspective as well, I think.
Yeah, I keep a number of, you know, key titles on my Kindle that I'd always like to throw back in. So my sort of my top 10 list, especially around the business thing. Like you, I've been looking to reduce the amount of books that I have. I think that what I did was I donated a, you know, 15 or 16 boxes worth of books, and now I'm beginning to reduce the last set by selling them on eBay. So I totally agree, and a lot of the books there, you sit there and you think, yeah, it'd be great, I really want to read that again, but again, if it's available on Kindle, it just makes it so much easier. The big benefit I also find with the Kindle is the ability to do a search. So, you know, if you're looking for that one bit of text or that one throwaway line or that quote, that's where the Kindle really is head and shoulders above everything else.
Indeed. Now, one of the books I picked up recently was something that I'd had my eye on for a little bit of time. And actually, I love going around secondhand bookstores in market towns when I'm traveling for business here in the UK. Love going in places, finding, you know, old copies of books. Not that I'm a collector or anything. What I'm basically saying, Robert, is I love to buy books cheap. So one of the books I found was by an author, Richard Carlson, who you're probably familiar with. And this book was called Don't Worry, Make Money: Spiritual and Practical Ways to Create Abundance and More Fun in Your Life. Now, I picked that book up, and I think it was £1, £1.50 or so in a bookstore. Apps, one of the best books I've read this year. You know, for a couple of quid, pick it up at a second-hand bookstore. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, Richard Carlson is famous for a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff that I read a few years ago. But Don't Worry, Make Money was, I think it's of a lot of interest to business owners, but really of interest to anyone, because it talks about managing your money, being calmer about life, not worrying about things so much, and the implications of spending rather than saving. Lots of really practical tips in there, and of course it makes it all the sweeter that I picked it up for a couple of pound at a bookstore. So immediately saving money on that one. But Don't Worry, Make Money by Richard Carlson, great book.
So can I ask you, has there ever been a book, let's say more on the business side than on the fiction side, that you just couldn't put down? You just had to read from cover to cover, and, you know, you're walking down the street tripping over and you're reading it in the bath and, you know, while you're getting dressed and all that sort of stuff. Has there been a business book that's grabbed you in that respect?
Yeah, I think there's been two or three. The first one that springs out had a profound effect on my life, and it's The E-Myth. By Michael Gerber, The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And of course, I refer to that really as the industry we work in, managed services. I refer to it as the MSP Bible. The first question I ask of anyone who approaches me to work, and I should explain for listeners who don't know who I am, I used to run an IT company, and now I do coaching work with other IT businesses. First question I ask of any IT business that approaches me wanting to work with me is, have you read The E-Myth? And if they say no, I say, okay, we'll have a conversation somewhere down the line, go away and read that. That's the biggest piece of advice I can give for you right now. I read The E-Myth probably back in 2005, I'm going to say, and it had such a profound effect, I couldn't put the book down. I read it and I kept looking over my shoulder. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. You think, the author has written this book for me. He's written it totally about me. It speaks to me on so many different levels. And I'm thinking, I'm being recorded here. Somebody's doing this as a practical joke. And read The E-Myth, and it made such a difference, you know, in terms of thinking about, instead of owning a job, owning a business, systemizing your business, really extracting yourself from the business and making the business scalable without needing to rely on you. And I say it had a profound or a life-changing effect. I know people throw that phrase around quite a lot, but it really did for me, because it was the move away from me selling my time for money as an IT business owner doing break fix work into creating recurring and building a managed service provider. So if ever there was a book that kicked off everything that I've done up until this point, this career that I'm on, it's The E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Interesting. And E-Myth, yeah, I remember reading that many, many years ago and having, you know, the same sort of profound effect. And it's certainly one of those must-read books for anybody in the IT game who runs a business, but obviously it was aimed at businesses wider than that as well. So again, a great example of, you know, one of those must-read books. And I think it, like I said, it gives you a level playing field and people to understand what's going on. And again, it's what you would hear from a lot of people with a bit of experience. Hey, look, yeah, as you say, Richard, get in there, read the book, and then we can talk after that.
I think the other, along those same lines, the other book that really has had a profound effect on my life is a book called The Go-Giver by a wonderful author called Bob Berg, an American author. And The Go-Giver really is a business parable. Maybe a difficult one to explain, actually. You know, a parable feels a bit like fiction, but it's a very short read. And I mean, literally, I can remember cancelling an appointment and not wanting to put it down because I needed to finish it there and then. It only took a couple of hours to read from cover to cover. But again, had a profound effect on me. You know, work helped me to understand that focusing on putting other people's needs in business and in personal life first, focusing on providing value to other people, you know, has a big effect on you as an individual. The way your relationships improve, what you can expect to earn from providing value to other people, and really enjoyment of life as well. And it's, you know, it's another life-changing book for me, The Go-Giver, because since I think really underneath the surface, I was probably already agreed with the Go-Giver philosophy of putting other people first there, of putting other people's needs first. But once I really started to focus on it based on what Bob Berg and the co-author John David Mann calls the five laws of stratospheric success, once I really started focusing on those on a day-to-day basis and integrating it into my life, I found my business took off. I found my relationships got better. I found the number of opportunities that fell into my lap increased. So for me, The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and John David Mann, hugely, hugely influential book.
Is it would be true to say from your perspective, those books and maybe a few others, especially the E-Myth, I believe, but you can read them over and over and over again. They give you different information depending where you are in the journey.
Oh, absolutely. And The Go-Giver, for instance, is a book that I typically read, you know, once every 12 months or so. And you think, well, how can you read a book, you know, especially a book that's fairly short? How can you read that again and again? But it's absolutely true. You know, I can pick up The Go-Giver at any given time of year, read it again, and it will share a new piece of wisdom, really, that's applicable to exactly where I am at that moment in time, or maybe a problem or a challenge that's floating around in my head. And it, you know, it helps ground me, helps me bring me back to what I feel now are core values for me. It helps remind me of the way to deal with life on a day-to-day basis. So I think the same for the E-Myth. It's worth revisiting it again and again to remind yourself that, you know, this is good stuff. And sometimes we can read a book, but over time drift away from the lessons it teaches us. So those type of books, that I've got, probably got two or three of those books, those must-read books or those really life-changing influential books, and I revisit them again and again.
And again, it would be safe to say that they're pretty much timeless, and that is a good indication. And it doesn't have to be. Some books work for some people, some other books may not, but I think it's a matter of accumulating this reference library that you can always fall back to. In my case, I suppose I have, you know, there are one book that I would read on a regular basis is The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Again, very short Eastern philosophy. It's one of the oldest books apparently in human history, but it has some very, very key concepts, and it's a matter of looking at those in a matter that can be applied to business. So perhaps not as emotional, but certainly gives you a good grounding and is something that can be visited on a regular basis. So the Eastern book philosophy I find also to fit in quite nicely these days is something that resonates with me. May not be for everybody, but certainly like to have those and revisit them on a yearly basis at least.
But there's a number of books that I'm find myself picking up lately as well that tend to be very, very short chapters, almost essays. I find that they're really good books for getting me back into the habit of reading. I said I love reading, but there can be times actually, you know, you get busy and the last thing you want to do is pick up a book because you've got so much to do. And of course, those are exactly the times when you should pick up a book because, you know, it helps you get grounded and it helps take your mind off the problems at hand, helps your subconscious maybe wander a little bit and find solutions to challenges in your life, both personal and work at that time. But sometimes it can feel like a big ask to when you're so busy to pick up a book and read a huge chapter. I say huge chapter, you know, we both know it's a short read really, but it can feel like a huge ask. So I've become quite a fan of stocking my library up with a number of books that that have very short chapters, almost essays into it. So I mentioned earlier one of the books I read, Grace Marshall, 21 Ways to Manage the Stuff That Sucks Up Your Time. Very small chapters to read. You know, I was reading, it's an easy ask for you. I was reading two or three of those chapters, you know, over a cup of tea, 5-10 minutes in the morning. And that lowered the resistance to me picking up a book. And I've recently read one along a similar sort of vein. The chapters are only sort of 3 to 5 pages long. And it was a book called Winning Without Losing. 66 strategies for succeeding in business while living a happy and balanced life. I'd love to be able to pronounce the name of the author. I've shared tweets with him on Twitter a couple of times. The chap's name is Martin Bjergaard. I believe that's how it's pronounced. But Martin has put together a really, really good book where he offers strategies for business owners to succeed, both business professionally and in personal life, without giving up things. You know, there's the old myth, I believe, that, you know, to be successful, you've got to work all the hours that God sends. I don't believe that's true at all. You know, talking about working smart, and this is basically 66 strategies where Martin has gone out and spoken to other very uber successful business owners about how they've become successful without sacrificing, you know, their home life, without sacrificing their friends and their family relationships to do this. Again, the chapters are very, very easy read. So I found that an easy book to get into. And once I started reading it, of course, I couldn't put it down. So great book for me.
So what about the audiobooks? Do you are you into audiobooks at all?
I'm not particularly. With that said, I've found myself doing a lot more miles on the road recently, longer journeys, you know, a couple of hours or more on the motorways. And so I've picked up a couple of audiobooks recently, just to sort of books that I've looked at, and they've been very small type, very long chapters. And so the resistance to me diving into them has been quite high. So I've bought them as audiobooks. I've listened to them in the car, 3-hour journey, gone through an entire audiobook, and from that, and then I've gone back and referred to certain chapters within the paperback or within the Kindle version that I found, you know, the audiobook has really piqued my interest in. So I'm not a huge audiobook person. I'm a huge podcast person. I listen to your podcast, Robert. I listen to other podcasts within our industry. I go out walking, you know, between 30 minutes and an hour every day, and combine listening to a podcast with that sort of healthy constitutional walk as well. So podcast, yes. Audiobooks, not so much. But audiobooks, you know, every time I've listened to them, I've really enjoyed them. So maybe it's something that that I want to do a little bit more of.
I think probably it's too easy to become distracted with audiobooks. It's too easy to get up and do something else and pretend to be listening in the background, whereas reading a book or the Kindle tends to, you know, get you focused, and you know, you zone out, you get your cup of tea, you sit down, you make the time to do it. So I think, like I said, audiobooks really good when you're in the car or traveling, you know, maybe in the plane or something, but perhaps not so good, you know, around the house or whatever.
The audiobook that I read recently was actually a gift from a friend of mine, Bjorn Zreloff, in America. And he, we were talking earlier on about The E-Myth and The Go-Giver, sort of life-changing books. Bjorn shared with me, he said he'd read this book and it had been profoundly influential on it. And it was called The Power of Full Engagement, Managing Time, Not Energy, by Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz, the authors there. It's quite a thick, heavy book. It's quite heavy on case studies and research. I must admit, you know, Bjorn recommended it to me. He sent me a copy. I looked at it and thought, yeah, I'll get around to reading that. And then, of course, immediately realized, hey, you know, this is going to be one of those books that, unless I'm careful, gathers dust. So I was on the road later that week for a couple of long car journeys, went and grabbed the audio version of it and found a fantastic listen, you know, the audio copy of it. And of course, when I got back home at the end of that week after being on the road, there was a couple of chapters in the book that I thought, you know, listening to that audio chapter makes me want to go back and read the paperback chapter again. I went back and read it again, made notes in the book, and found it very good. So from that perspective, audiobooks, you know, sort of lower the resistance to reading some of those more research or factual heavy books, lowers the resistance for me reading them.
Yeah, I think that the interesting thing, again, is there's so many different ways to read in inverted commas. And again, part of it, I believe, is making time to actually read rather than skim. I think we spend so much time skimming articles, skimming emails, skimming whatnot. To actually get in and read and dedicate the time and be absorbed by the book is where the majority of the difference is. And I think that makes a huge difference in the ability for you to retain it and then also apply it.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's an excellent round of books. And do you think that going forward, is there any? You still see yourself going along that same path of reading? Do you find any particular topics that may be going to grab your attention? I mean, you mentioned fiction there. Have you got any sort of genre? I think I found one of the things I found that was really, really enjoyable was, surprisingly enough, Sherlock Holmes. So I bought the complete set of Sherlock Holmes book on Kindle for about $2, and then spent a couple of months reading them. They're absolutely brilliantly written, so enjoyable, and just hadn't experienced them. So that was a real eye-opener for me. But what about for yourself, Richard?
Well, I think getting back to fiction, as I said, is something I read an awful lot of self-development books, an awful lot of biographies and things like that. But, back when I was a little bit younger, I used to read a lot more sci-fi and fantasy fiction. I mentioned that I finally read Isaac Asimov's I, Robot the other day. Absolutely loved it. And that's the exciting thing. It's the back catalogue. Asimov's work is years old now, and I've only just got around to read it. And of course, he's got a whole catalogue of books that I can read. I think I'm on the borders of almost reading, almost going back and revisiting all the David Gemmell books that I used to read when I was younger as well. I've got a library full of those fantasy books, which again I found very uplifting, very very interesting reads, and even though they're not self-development or motivational books in itself, a good fiction book of course can lift you up, can put you in a great mood, can set you up for doing lots of great work. So I think there's benefits from that perspective. Going back to the start of our conversation though, what type of books you read? Really anything. I was reading a book the other day that might be of interest to you actually, Robert, given your interest in history, and the book was called What Churchill Do. And it was basically, it's almost a combination of historical, an historical look back at Winston Churchill's life, but business lessons to be drawn from it as well. How he managed relationships during the war, how he managed the economics during the war and things like that. Now, I'm not a history buff in the same way you are, so I probably wouldn't pick up a book about Churchill, about the history of World War. But this book, because it had got a business slant on it, lessons that you can apply nowadays, I found myself reading it and enjoying that a whole lot. So that was a great book for me. Sorry, go ahead, Robert.
Please. No, I was just going to say, one of the good examples is, what if scenarios. I mean, some of the books I've read around world history, a good example was I read a book about, Hitler's options. So if he'd done this instead of doing that, what may have happened? The other interesting one that I read, someone recommended me to a long time ago, was where you take maybe a technology and move it into another location in history. So I think the one I read was something about the Civil War in the US, but for example, someone had managed to procure automatic weapons and how that sort of changed the whole, the whole aspect. And it's again those what if scenarios. And for me, I think extracting a little bit from the book, I think one of the movies that has really, blew my mind the very first time I saw it was The Matrix. The very first original Matrix was like, oh my God. And I think the other one that really made me think, I don't know if you've seen it, is Inception.
Where you
sort of have to go, oh, hang on, how does all this work? So I think those sort of things can really challenge and really, I find it really mind expanding. They're sort of books that I love. So fantastic option. And the Churchill one, I think, is another good example of where Churchill, I think, has an impact on history is just his involvement from, World War One days all the way through to, the 1950s and the 1960s. So again, he's had a huge influence on history, and learning something from him is imperative, I believe.
I should mention actually one of the areas, I keep saying I want to read more fiction. One of the things that distracts me from reading more fiction, I might have shared with you before, but I'm a huge fan of comic books. You know, Marvel, DC, not just the superhero genre, but comic books as a whole. And I recently signed up for Marvel's Digital Unlimited service. So I've already got a huge, and when I mean huge, you know, I've got a room full of comic books, you know, highly endured and all the rest of it. But Marvel Unlimited basically gives you the access to the back catalogue of all the Marvel comics. So when I say that I want to read more fiction books, if I'm in the mood for reading something, you know, fictional, quite often I'll be distracted by this huge whole back catalogue of Stan Lee and other comic books there. So, you know, whether purists would count comic book reading as reading or not, you know, you're looking at pictures and that. But I find, you know, it's a great way to relax and take your mind off things as well. So for me, it has the same effect as reading a book.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't, must admit, haven't been as much into comic books. I mean, I remember reading, you know, Judge Dredd and The World of Goo and all those sort of comics back then, but it really didn't stick with me, unfortunately, I suppose. I mean, I do enjoy them, but I found that the pictures, I suppose, a bit distracting, looking at the pictures and then trying to read and move on. So, but yeah, it's a huge industry now, and obviously backed up now by the movie genre and all that, getting this additional people interested in it. So, yeah, I think it's great. And it's a matter of looking at it and saying, look, if I enjoy it, if I get relaxation, there's certainly a benefit there. And if it encourages more people to read, then I would say, yeah, go for it. It's certainly a worthwhile avenue.
So what are you reading at the moment, Robert, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I've just finished, like I said, the big book that's taken me a while to plow through, but you know, was enjoyable, was obviously the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And then from there, I've got back into the business books. So I've read the Richest Man in Babylon recently. That was one of the ones that always wanted to read and work out, you know, I wasn't as impressed with it as I thought I would be. So, but you know, again, you'd read it, put it away, and potentially come back to it. Another one I read recently was called Get Big Fast, Do More Good. It was based on this business that was something, I can't remember what it's called, but something to do with carrots or something. And they make all these good-natured cosmetics. Again, it had a lot of hype, tended just to be a story rather than some business lessons. The book that I'm reading now is Vagabonding, which is based on the concept of traveling rather than being a tourist. So rather than just spending a week's holiday and going somewhere and staying in the ritzy hotels and going out with all the tourists, to, for example, you know, move to a location and, you know, live in the communities and basically let your travel be more random and experience the world firsthand and obviously make mistakes and all that sort of stuff, but that's where the real enjoyment is. So I don't think I would ever be able to do that myself, but I would, you know, like to think that when I do travel, that's what I'm looking to experience, the real essence of the place rather than just the tourist attractions. So basically almost finished those books, so I'll need to put up a review of those to let people know. And again, people can follow both of us on Goodreads and also Amazon to see what we're thinking. So as much as I've read two books, I suppose, recently, I think I've added another 15, so there'll never be an end.
No, there's never an end to it. Interesting you mentioned about, you know, sharing reviews and things like that. One of the things I've started doing with my email newsletter, which goes out once a month, is I've started including the book of the month, the book that I've read. I've also started including it on the my email signature. What am I reading right now? And I've found that it does two things. One, it starts a conversation. Because people, you know, read what I'm reading in my email email signature, and drop an email back and say, "Hey, that looks interesting. I'm going to pick up a copy." And you start the conversation. When you bump into each other at networking events and social events in the future, how did you get on with that book? That type of conversation. But secondly, and this goes for Goodreads as well, I think it reminds you to be focused on what you're reading at that time. By putting the book you're reading in your email signature, it actually becomes quite embarrassing, doesn't it, if you're still 6 weeks on reading the same book or 2 months on and people are saying, hey, what's going on there? So you're conscious that you're letting people know what you read. You're conscious that you want to move, you know, you want to update it and keep that fresh. So by putting that in the email signature and by putting what you're reading on Goodreads, I think there's almost an innate desire to want to be current and to keep moving forward, to move on. Same token for putting it in the email newsletter. People love to hear what I'm. They're always asking me what I'm reading. What would I recommend reading? So I started putting those links in my email newsletter every month, and that's had good feedback as well.
Well, I think that's great, and I think one other thing we need to focus on here before we do wrap things up is that. Not only, I think, are we readers, but we're also authors. So you might want to share with people the experience yourself of actually getting around and writing a book, and let us know how that sort of came about and how you got to it and then how successful that has turned out to be.
Sure. So for those people who know me well, this will become as no surprise. But for those who don't know me so well, and, you know, I'm always getting very kind comments from people saying, wow, you're a prolific writer, you know, blog posts and the other content that you put out. How do you find the time for it? But for those that know me well, know that I'm a huge procrastinator. You know, I'm constantly putting things off. And so for me, you know, I've had a number of books in my head for the longest time. Never got round to doing them because, you know, I feel like it's a huge job, you know, to write thousands of words and put them all down on paper. And that when I sold the MSP business coming up to 3 years ago now, I was actually approached by a publisher and offered a book deal straight away afterwards to write on a technical subject. And I know you and I spoke about this at the time, Robert. You're much less of a procrastinator than me. In fact, the opposite end of the spectrum. I really procrastinated over writing that book, even though I got the contract in place with the publisher. And it was actually a book about Microsoft's small business server. And so my bacon was almost saved there, depending on which way you want to look at it. Of course, Microsoft announced that year that they were withdrawing SBS from a sale. And so I had to have a conversation with the publisher and say, hey, do you still want me to finish this book off or what? And of course, the answer came back, no, we think we're going to shelve that one. So I was saved from procrastinating over that any longer. But it did make me think about, okay, what is the barrier here? What's getting in the way of me writing this book? And I think part of it is I tend to look at things, as many people do, almost in black and white thinking. You know, I've got this huge job to do. Where am I going to start? And what I realized, of course, was, well, a book is actually just comprised of paragraphs and chapters. So the old phrase, how do you eat an elephant? One chunk at a time. That really applies. So I started chunking things down and saying, you know, just want to, you know, it's enough to concentrate on writing a chapter and getting that done. It's enough to concentrate on writing 500 words and getting that done. And so toward the end of it's coming up to 12 months ago, just over 12 months ago, I had this idea in my head for writing a book for IT managed service providers. And it felt huge. It felt like, oh, I've got so much information I want to give. Where on earth do I start? So I hunked it down. And I thought, okay, I'm going to make this a really simple thing to write, a really simple thing to read. I'm going to write the top 5 mistakes that managed service providers make that cost them time and money. You know, 5 tips alone or 5 mistakes, that should be a lot easier to write. And of course, I got the book finished within, you know, 48 hours or so, a little bit of editing to be done afterwards. But and it just showed me, you know, it's not a huge read, yet the day after I released that, it got to number 2 on the Amazon UK business books section. I was kept off the number 1 spot by Steve Jobs' biography. So I guess out of all the people to lose out to the number 1 spot, I'm quite comfortable with losing out to Steve Jobs. But the point is, you know, the book, once I'd really focused it down on just 5 things that I wanted, 5 messages that I wanted to get across in the book became a lot easier for me to write, a lot easier for me to get out there. And it's still, you know, people are still buying it on Kindle. People are still downloading it today, a year on. So there's a lesson there for me. If, you know, for a lot of us who think we want to write a book, it feels like a huge, impossible mountain to climb. Chunk it down. Make it small. Focus on, you know, a small subset of the book that you want to write and see how you get on from there.
Well, I think part of it is the success you've got writing the blog and the other things that you've done. It's a matter of, like I said, just pulling those bits together and making the step forward. So I think the biggest challenge is for a lot of people to actually start writing. And, you know, Seth Godin's a really good, it's a good little video that he's done. And it basically says, you know what, just write. Just there's the blog, doesn't cost you anything, get it out there. If nobody except your cat enjoys it, well, guess what? It's only going to improve because the what he calls the metacognition of getting it out of your head and getting it down into paper benefits you. And I think there's nothing truer than that. And my recommendation, obviously, is to people is to write. Obviously, if you're going to write, you can get some business benefit if you do something like a blog. But even if nobody sees it, I think it's a very, very important process to help get the ideas out into a something that does make sense. And there are so many different ways of doing it, whether it's writing a blog, writing a book, all this sort of correspondence. We spend so much time writing, perhaps, or typing up emails, and, you know, a little bit more craft, a little bit more focus, and a little bit more attention to our audience can yield very, very big results, I think. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And going back to, you know, that I think the video referring to Seth Godin, I believe it was Tom Peters talking about why blog. And it was like, well, if you know, if you're worried about who's going to read it, don't. Just get out there and you'll get good at it. And once you get good at it, people will be reading it. You know, and I've been blogging for, it's got to be probably 8 years now. And I've got a significant, you know, blog readership, significant tribe of people who follow what I write. And it all started out with me just writing for myself. I was writing just for the sake of getting the ideas out of my head, clarifying them, succinctly putting them down on paper or electronic form, I should say, in the case of a blog. And I found it just made me a better speaker. It allowed me to explain my ideas more clearly to people. There was no downside to it. And then, of course, people started reading it and commenting. And 8 years on, you know, tens of thousands of people read my blog every month, which is very flattering. And it's built a community of people who follow the stuff that I put out there. So blogging for me, you know, as an author or an aspiring author, blogging's one of the best ways to build up an audience. And I think, you know, in this self-publishing world that we live in now, moving away from working from a publisher, I think that the best thing anybody could do if they've got aspirations to become an author is to build up an audience first, and then put the book out there, rather than trying to put the book out and then build up an audience around it. You know, if you think a book is too much for you to write at the moment, start blogging on the subjects that you are interested in. And hey, you know what? Fine, you're going to think, you know what? I want to pull all these blogs together, put them into a book. Oh, and by the way, you've got this big audience of people who are already reading your blog that are interested in the finished book as well. So absolutely no downsides to blogging.
And I, like I said, I think the big benefit is the self-publishing. You can self-publish on Amazon, service I use called Lulu, another one called eJunkie. There are just so many opportunities and reduces the friction, and you can get something out there very, very quickly. And even the tools you have on the desktop these days allowing you to create a PDF document looks pretty schmick. So there are lots and lots of options, and there should be no resistance to doing that. And as Richard indicates, I think the secret to it is just start off small. Just start off with one little concept and not trying to write the Lord of the Rings or something straight off the bat, although you may want to. The secret to it is, like I said, in small increments and build it up. And before you know it, you'll certainly be on to, you know, volume two or volume three, because it's just a matter of getting in the routine. And I think what I would recommend is one of the best books I've ever read on the process of writing was by Stephen King, called On Writing. So he talked about his process for writing, and as you probably know, he's a prolific, absolutely prolific writer. And the discipline and the system that he has about writing was very, very intriguing as to how he's been so successful and how he's disciplined himself to do it. And again, for him, it's very much a system, and as you can see by the number of published works he has available, it works. So if you're looking at doing that, again, read something. That book I'd recommend certainly to give you an idea of, you know, what the authorship's about, and obviously the pain and the angst that he's gone through and the hard work, but it's paid off because he has had this system in place.
Mm. And I'm fascinated as well by how the evolution of books. You know, we've talked about Kindle and electronic books, and I was listening to a podcast just yesterday where I think an author was talking about the new style of book that they're bringing out, where it's actually geo-dependent. So wherever you are in the world affects which part of the story that you read. So the best way I can explain that, if you've ever watched any, say, a zombie movie or something like that, you know, where there's an outbreak, you start to ask the questions, okay, well, that's the main story, you know, World War Z, something like that. But I wonder what's happening in a different part of the world. I wonder what's happening on an island. Are they closing up their borders? Wouldn't it be fascinating, of course, to be in that part of the world and to be able to read the story about that part of the world based on where you are? So that's one thing. I'm not saying it's for everyone, but it's an interesting concept. And one of my favorite, I was going to say one of my favorite authors, actually, it started the other way around. We were talking about blogging. One of my favorite bloggers is a chap by the name of Nicholas Bate, who I saw give a presentation probably a couple of years ago now. And I've sort of fanatically almost followed his blog, his newsletter, you know, the sort of things that he puts out there. And Nicholas has put a book out that's called You Only Better. So almost a self-development book there. But it's got some beautiful artwork in, some sketches and things that he has put together that really complement and really enhance the messages he's trying to put across. It's very difficult for me to describe what You Only Better is, the format of the book, but I'm not going to say it's unique, but it's certainly very different to any self-development book you would normally read. The way it's laid out, the way the messages are put across to you. That's going to be the book of my month in my next newsletter, email newsletter that's coming out later this month. But anybody listening to this podcast, You Only Better by Nicholas Bate, and his blog is called Strategic Edge. So I'd highly encourage you to check that out as well. Very interesting.
So Bate is B-A-I-T or?
N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S. B-A-T-E. And what we're talking, I'm going to use the power of Google to bring up his blog, because he's actually, Robert, I think you'd find Nicholas's blog really interesting as well, because it sort of turns the idea of what a blog should be a little bit on its head as well. And the URL is nicholasbate.typepad.com nicholasbate.typepad.com. And I won't spoil the surprise. Go and take a look at the blog. Anybody who reads blogs, Nicholas Bate's blog is very different to what you would normally be used to in a blog. Go and check it out. I think you'll enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, I think that we have so much information here that we're bursting out of our podcast seams here. So we probably need to wind it up to let Richard get on with the rest of his day, seeing it is morning over there. Is there anything, obviously, you've mentioned your book, you've mentioned your newsletter and your blog as well. Where's the best place for people to get in contact with you and to follow the stuff that you are doing?
Sure. So the best way for people to find a central location to find all of the resources that I've talked about would be my blog, which is www.tublog.co.uk, and it's got a link there to the mistakes MSPs make, the top five mistakes that MSPs make that cost them time and money. I think there's a link there to my Goodreads bio, but you could also go to goodreads.com and find me. And of course, I'm very active on Twitter at Tublog, T-U-B-B-L-O-G. So please feel free to reach out to me.
Excellent. Well, I'll thank Richard very much for his time and also his knowledge. And strongly recommend that if you keep in touch with what he's doing, you'll certainly see what he's reading. And I would strongly recommend that you follow some of those recommendations that we spoke about today. There's a huge amount of great information for technology and normal business people. So once again, Richard, thank you very much for your time. And I think the listeners will get a huge amount out of what we've discussed.
Oh, my pleasure, Robert. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
All right, so that is all from this episode of the CIA Need to Know podcast. Thank you very much for listening. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.